The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter number 5, Texts number 25 and 26, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on May 21st, 2008, in Helsinki, Finland.
So, today I have been very much blessed by your association. Our ISKCON movement, it is a state of war with the material world. And there are many parts of the battle going on. But to be here on the front line, that's the most exciting place. The front line soldiers, they are the greatest heroes. They are the most decorated, you see. So I'm very much blessed to be today here with the frontline soldiers. So today we are going to continue on with this wonderful Bhakti Vaibhava study program. In the second canto, chapter number 5, The Cause of All Causes. Today we will read texts 35 and 36.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Om namo
Sa eva purushastasmad andang nirbhijya nirgata sahasra vrangi bhavyaksha sahasra nana shirshavam. The Lord Mahavishnu, although lying in the causal ocean, came out of it. In dividing himself, his Haranyagarbha, he entered into each universe and assumed the Virat Rupa, with thousands of legs, arms, mouths, heads, etc., purport. The expansions of the planetary system within each and every universe are situated in the different parts of the Virat Rupa, universal form of the Lord, and they are described as follows. Yasye hava yavair lokan kalpayanti manishina Katya adibir adas sapto saptordvang jaganadibi. Great philosophers imagine that the complete planetary systems in the universe are displays of the different upper and lower limbs of the universal body of the Lord. Purport. The word kalpayanti, or imagine, is significant. The Virat, universal form of the Absolute, is an imagination of the speculative philosophers who are unable to adjust to the eternal two-handed form of Lord Sri Krishna. Although the universal form as imagined by the great philosophers is one of the features of the Lord, it is more or less imaginary. It is said that the seven planetary systems are situated above the waist of the universal form, whereas the lower planetary systems are situated below his waist. The idea impressed herein is that the Supreme Lord is conscious of every part of his body, and nowhere in the creation is there anything beyond his control.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Ada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajiva Sadaitam Savadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Sha.
Srila Prabhupada captures the essence by stating here that the Supreme Lord is conscious of every part of his body. In other words, this is considered the body of the Lord. The Virat Rupa. In your body, you're conscious. You see, if you step on a nail, you feel that in your foot. If it's cold, your body shivers. If it's hot, your body perspires. So we have the jiva, although situated as a spiritual spark within the heart, he is spread throughout the body in the form of consciousness. So just as we the individual jivas, spread throughout the body in the form of consciousness, so the universal self, the supreme self, Krishna, God, he expands his consciousness throughout the total existence. Krishna is absolutely, totally conscious of everything, everywhere, at every minute. And as Prabhupada concludes in his sentence here, nowhere in the creation is there anything beyond his control. So, not only is he aware of everything, but he's also controlling it. So, where does that leave us? Originally, we were situated in the spiritual world with Krishna, in loving service. But we became contaminated by envy, somehow or other, because we are independent. You see, the jiva, he is qualitatively one with the Supreme. Since the Supreme is supremely independent, and we are part and parcel of him, sharing his quality, just like a drop of ocean water, you see. It's salt. The ocean itself is salty, and so is that drop, you see. So ocean is salty, drop is salty. So the complete whole personality of Godhead, he is supremely independent. Therefore, we being a little tiny sample of him, we are also independent. That means we can choose to serve him or to rebel against him. That's our free choice. Many people ask me, they say, why God is giving us the choice? They think that's an imperfection in God's arrangement. But no, it is a perfect arrangement to give us the free will to choose to serve him or to leave him. Perfect arrangement. Why? Because love must be voluntary. You cannot force someone to love you. It's not possible. They put a gun at your head and say, love me or I'll shoot. You may say, I love you, Prabhu. Please don't. But see, in your heart, you think, what is this nonsense? You won't feel love if I try to force you to love me with a gun at your head. You see? So God does not force. Love must be given voluntarily. So the Supreme Person, he gives us that choice whether to love him or to leave him. That is his perfect arrangement. Because they say, without love there is no life, you see. If there's no loving relationship, then where is the life, you see? There's no happiness if there's no loving relationship. So, in order that Krishna himself wants that loving relationship. Therefore, he gives us that choice to love him or to leave him. Because if I choose, you see, voluntarily, of my own desire to love you, you see, without any coercion, that is real love, you see. So God or Krishna gives us that choice. And that is his perfect arrangement. So that millions and billions of living entities, actually an infinite number of living entities, can have loving relationship with him. The interesting thing in this connection is that just as here in Finland you have millions and billions of snowflakes. I usually don't come when there's snow, but the first time I came it was very snowy. Everywhere there was snow. Every snowflake is completely different. You put it under the microscope, you'll see that every single snowflake is completely unique. So, in the same way, even though there's unlimited numbers of living entities emanating from the transcendental form of the Lord, you see, it's like the sun is written, you know, millions and billions of sun rays all over the universe. You see, Krishna is manifesting millions and billions of jivas. But each and every one of them, like those snowflakes, is completely and totally unique. Why? Variety is the mother of enjoyment. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, isn't he? So since variety is the mother of enjoyment, therefore Krishna, to expand his own enjoyment unlimitedly, has expanded an infinite number of varieties of living beings so he can have an infinite number of varieties of relationships. So what does this mean? This means that you are unique. You're not a clone. You're a unique individual person who has qualities and characteristics that only you have. Of course, we all share qualities, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But each and every one of us has a certain personality which is unique to us. And that unique personality gives us the ability to serve Krishna with our own personality, and no one else can do them. Just like here in this room, there are many different persons, you see. I have a certain relationship with you, a certain relationship. With each one of you, I have a certain relationship. And that's different. You see, it's not the same. And that makes it interesting when I come to Finland, because there's so many different varieties of persons. So I can have different tastes, just like... you went to the... Okay, it's the big Janmashtami feast. Now it's Janmashtami. It'd be the big Janmashtami feast, and it's time to honor the Prasadam. And what is it? It's just one preparation. Would that be very enjoyable? Only one it's the Janmashtami feast, and there's only one preparation? Yeah, but it's sweet rice. It's good. But no, even if it's the best sweet rice in the world, still you want variety. You see, you want some salty, you want some this, some dry, some wet. When there's variety, then it becomes very, very enlivening, you see. The more there is variety, just like sometimes they have these feasts with 1,008 preps, you see. Talk about variety. You've seen one of those feasts, 1,008 preps. So, the more there is variety, there's enjoyment. So Krishna then makes unlimited varieties of jivas from himself, expansions of his own energy, to have an unlimited numbers of unlimited variety of loving relationships with. Therefore, he truly is the supreme enjoyer. You see? Because nobody has that kind of variety of enjoyment available for him. So we can try to compete with him if we're envious. Or we can realize, what's the use of competing with him? I mean, it doesn't make sense. You can't beat him, join him. There's an old saying in English. You know, you can't beat him, join him. So So, we're not able to defeat Krishna. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all-powerful, all-beautiful, all-renounced, all-wealthy, all-famous, and all-wise. You can't compete with him. So why bother trying? I mean, you know, we might as well just humbly admit we can't compete with him. We might as well just try to surrender to him. Be on the winning side. You see. If you try to fight against Krishna, then you're guaranteed to be on the losing side, you see. Amare Krishna, Rake Krishna, Amare Ke. You try to fight against Krishna, you will definitely lose. So why even try? You know, doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense to fight against Krishna. Many tried and many died. What was that king's name? The imitation? Pandraka? Yeah. I will challenge Krishna and show him, yes, I am the real Krishna, I am the real Vishnu. His two fake arms, you know, like a theater actor, you know. That's a fool, you know. And then there was that Varshaman, Kamsa's Varshaman. Krishna said, okay, give me the clothes. See, Krishna likes to enjoy. He comes in he's out, and he's used to the village dress, you know. But now he's in the city, and, you know, country boys, when they come to the city, they want to put on some city clothes, you know, try out some different types of clothing. So, coward boys and Krishna, he wanted they should now put on these royal clothes. It'd be fun for them. They wanted to do that, but the washerman wouldn't cooperate. Krishna wanted those clothes. He wouldn't give them. So Krishna finished him off with this, took the, cut off his head, you see. So, the washerman, if he had been intelligent, he would surrender. He'd bow down and say, yes, my lord. But he chastised Krishna. Don't you know who these clothes belong to? They belong to King Kamsa. Who do you think you are to challenge King Kamsa? Big mistake. Big mistake. When you're dealing with Krishna, there's one place to be, and that's down on the floor offering obeisances. It's the only place. Even Prabhupada says when we take darshan, we should first look at the feet, gradually go up. It's not like, you know, buddies with the Lord, you know. Some people think that they have some kind of intimate relationship with Krishna. You know, somebody sent me a photograph of themselves holding the deity like this. They had a Krishna deity holding it like this, like they're lovers. You know, insane, absolutely insane. We belong down on the floor, you know, looking up. I can never forget my first teacher in this movement was His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj, the great kirtan leader, preacher, festival organizer. He had made some mistake along with, there was four sannyasis, and they made some mistake preaching Mayavad philosophy, actually. So Prabhupada gave them very strong punishment to rectify them from this aparad they had committed. You have to stay away from all the, you can't go to any ISKCON temple. You're banned from all ISKCON temples. You're not banned from being my disciples, but you're banned from all ISKCON temples. That was the order Prabhupada gave them. Now you have to go out and open 10 centers each. You split up into four, and each opens 10 centers. That was their tapasya, and their offense of preaching Mayavad philosophy. So, I was on the fortunate end of that punishment because I was in the second temple that was opened by Vishnu Janma. He grabbed me and convinced me that I should be surrendered to Prabhupada. So I'm eternally indebted to His Holiness Vishnu Jan Maharaj for doing that. But then he took being very eager for Prabhupada's association. He took, I don't know if it was, he went to a Ratha Yatra festival. They just get some, see, you know, get some mercy, get Prabhupada's association. After opening two temples, he went back to a festival where the devotees were there. Big festival. And there was a meeting that night of the temple presidents. And Prabhupada, I heard the tape. And I distinctly remember Prabhupada. He said like this, "So, Vishnu Jan Maharaj, how many centers?" He's supposed to open 10, right? So in the most humble voice, like he was crawling out from underneath the carpet, you know, looking up, you know, he said, "2. And Prabhupada said, "You will have to open another 8. So I remember that mood, the way that Vishnu Jan Maharaj responded to Prabhupada's question. It wasn't like proudly, "Oh, I've opened 2 temples, Prabhupada." It wasn't like that at all. It was 2. So that is the actual mood that makes us strong in Krishna consciousness. Never feeling that I'm great. Even though we have a great service to do, we have to flood this country with Prabhupada's books. It's the greatest service. It's the most glorious service. But we always feel how we are unqualified, actually. Somehow or other, we've been engaged in this way. We don't think we are great. Even though we're doing the greatest activity to flood this country with Prabhupada's books, you see, we don't feel that we are great personally. We understand it's only by the mercy of Guru and the previous acharyas and Krishna that we can do anything. As soon as we think I'm great, then we lose our potency. Our potency is gone. But as long as we feel ourselves humble instruments of Guru and the previous acharyas, you see, then we can. There's no limit to what we can accomplish for Srila Prabhupada. No limit. So this quality of humility is most important then. We have to become very, very humble. Prabhupada nicely explains in the Nectar Devotion. He says there that, quoting Rupa Goswami, "I am simply trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, you see. But I feel totally unqualified to do so." Prabhupada says, this should be the attitude of all preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement. We want to do big things, you see. We want to do big, big things to please Krishna and Guru. We want to make the whole world Krishna conscious, you see. Actually, that was a vow when I was sworn in as a Guru. They have a vow that you take. And I vowed that I would, my vow was to flood the whole world with Prabhupada's books. That's why I really enlightened when I come here to be with you all, because you're right there on the front lines. But I give all encouragement. Sometimes a disciple will write me. They have a desire to distribute books, and one of their local authorities will say, "No, I think you're better suited for something else." And they ask me what to do. I say, "Distribute books." Because anybody who has even the slightest desire for book distribution, they should be given all encouragement, because that's the most important way, you see. Not that the other things are not important, but that's the very most important thing, you see. That's the essence of our whole movement. It's like I gave the example of a war going on, you see. In a war, there's so many things. You got the artillery, you got the tanks, you got the medics, you got the chaplains, you got the cooks, you got the administrators, you got the computer programmers. You know, you got a huge thing. You were in the military. You know better than us. Dr. Ludwig was he knows from first-hand experience, but the whole essence of the thing, the whole effort is so that the frontline soldiers have all the best facility, you see. Everyone else is working behind the scenes to give energy, to give strength to those frontline soldiers. Because without them, nothing happens. They're the ones who are conquering the enemy territory, moving forward, inching forward to conquer all the territory. If the frontline soldier isn't there, you see, it doesn't work. If the Air Force is only there bombing the enemy, and there's no frontline soldiers to actually take the territory, then what did you accomplish? Nothing. So those devotees who are actually distributing books, they are doing the greatest service. So anyway, we've been given the greatest service. Prabhupada wants us to make a revolution. He told us that in Bombay. He said the whole world is being managed by rogues and demons. He said, now you make your life successful and you take the management. It's a very big project we have to make the world Krishna conscious. We should never think, yeah, I'm great because, you know, I'm trying to take over the world for Prabhupada, you know, by distributing Krishna consciousness. No. We have to always feel we're completely unqualified and just try to be an instrument in the hands of the previous acharyas. That is our success. If, even though we're actually very unqualified and incompetent, if you look at the actual standard of you know, the Vedic culture and you consider what kind of backgrounds we came from, I mean, pretty low class, really. You look at it honestly and objectively, we're pretty low class. Kerata hunan, what is that, Shaluka? Kerata hunindra pulindu pukasha. You see, that's us. Really low class people that somehow were saved. You see. But just as Lord Ram was able to take those monkeys out of the jungle, you see, and engage them successfully against these powerful rakshasas. These rakshasas had all mystic powers. So powerful they were. But there's some simple monkeys with some branches, some tree trunks, you see, fighting against these powerful rakshasas with all their mystical weapons. It's amazing. The monkeys defeated them. Why did they do that? How were they able to do that? Simply because they were empowered by Lord Ram. You see? So how does one become empowered? Krishna Shakti Veena Nahi Tari Pravartana. You have to be empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. That's the statement of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So how do we become empowered? By feeling completely unqualified and incompetent on our own strength to do anything. But simply agreeing to become an instrument, just as Arjuna was an instrument. You see, we have to be instruments. In the hands of our spiritual master and the previous acharyas. As soon as we agree to do that, then there's no limit to what can be accomplished. Absolutely no limit. There's no limit. So Prabhupada prays to be an instrument. He prays to be an instrument. I'm simply a puppet. And you pull my strings. That's how Prabhupada prays. That's the way to become empowered. Place yourself as completely a puppet in the hands of. Please, my dear Lord, use me in any way you see fit. In any way I can please you, you see. Let my every thought, my every word, my every deed in all times, all places, in all circumstances be for your pleasure. That's the secret of success in Krishna consciousness. So, I'm very happy that Krishna has pulled my strings to bring me here today, to be blessed by all of your Sangha. I can ask now if there's any questions. Yeah.
Prabhu, thank you for your class. I was thinking that many times when we start practicing Krishna consciousness, we are quite strict. But then sometimes it happens that we are not taking everything so seriously anymore, that we lose the strings gradually. So why is this?
Well, there's different modes of nature. This is often I hear people saying that they, you know, in the beginning they were all excited, they were enlivened, they were enthused, and gradually that went away, and they want to know what's going on. I thought Krishna consciousness was ever increasing. When those kind of things happen, it means the devotee, he was very much, his service was in Rajaguna. It wasn't, because Rajaguna is nectar in the beginning and poison in the end. So we're just acting out of passion. And of course it's nice. We do have to do that. It's very good. A young man, a young woman should take their passion and use that for Krishna. I'm not saying not to do that, but I'm saying you have to put the sattvic thing in there too, along with it. Because you have to cultivate sattva gun, and that means you know, good japa, reading the books, understanding the books, cultivating proper relationships with Vaishnavas. All of these things are essential. All the sattvic qualities, rabbinical qualities, they have to be cultivated simultaneously along with the passion, using the passion for Krishna. Because the sattva gun is poison in the beginning and nectar in the end. So if you combine the sattvic mentality and at the same time using your passion for Krishna, then that will take you to the transcendental platform. So if we find that we're losing our enthusiasm, there's just not enough we're not being sattvic enough, really. We're just being passionate. If we're burning out, that means we're operating in Rajaguna. We're not being sattvic enough. We're not learning the books well enough. We're not trying to develop saintly qualities. We're not trying to be, you know, we're not being aware enough of how I'm behaving with Vaishnavas in a proper brahminical way. All these things, you see. We're not careful enough to avoid the nama parads. It's neglecting the sattvic aspect of Krishna consciousness, which has to be there along with using your passion for Krishna. If we do both simultaneously, you see, just like Prabhupada, then we'll be successful. Prabhupada told us, a letter to one of our godbrothers, he said that someday you will be the leaders of the world. He said it will not be difficult. He said simply act with sincerity and intelligence. I was sitting with my godbrother, Adnamaran Prabhu, one of our leading devotees in our movement. And I'm sitting with him in Lima, Peru, earlier this year, yeah. And I had this quote on my screensaver on my computer. And he was, when it came on the screen, he was reading it. And he said, yes, and he emphasized intelligence, how important it was to be intelligent. Sincerity is very good, but there has to be intelligence also. Sometimes we're sincere and we're not intelligent. So that's it's very important. We have to develop intelligence. And that means to do everything, to do the details, to be more detail-oriented in everything that we do. Not just passionately do things with great sincerity and enthusiasm. That's good. But you have to be intelligent enough to see that the finer details are also being done very nicely. It's like when you're cooking for Krishna. You can be very enthusiastic, cutting the vegetables. You know, very enthusiastic. I want to make it nice for Krishna. But if you're not attentive to the details, you know, when you come to putting the spices in, then the subject will be a disaster. So we really have to be conscious of the subtle, more subtle aspects of our Krishna consciousness. Doing, you know, our relationships, the way that we're having it, the way that people are being influenced by the way that we deal with them. We have to really be sensitive and conscious of what we're doing. And this way, we won't lose the enthusiasm. And we just, because sattva gun becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter and sweeter and sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. To be more sattvic as we're, you know, being passionate, which is great. Prabhupada loved our passionate energy. He loved it. He encouraged it like anything. The transcendental competition, you know, who will distribute the most books? You know, he said, whatever temple distributes the most books, that's where I will come and do my translation. He encouraged that like anything. But at the same time, he said that boil the milk until it becomes thick and sweet. It should be very, very, very good understanding and cultivation of this process of Krishna consciousness at the same time. So does that answer your question? Tathya Bhagavu, you had a question?
In the verse that was mentioned, the Lord, although lying in the coastal ocean, came out of it and dividing himself as a Hiranyakarbha. So could you kindly explain the Hiranyakarbha?
Let's see then. Let me get the book. Hiranyakarbha.
What is Hiranyakarbha?
Hiranya. See, Hiranya's bed. No. Gold, yeah, that's right. Golden womb. Literally, golden womb. So the Lord, lying in the causal ocean, came out of it, dividing himself as Hiranyagarbha. So that's some expansion of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu, of course, is the big Vishnu. There's the Garbhadakshay Vishnus, they are the little Vishnus compared to Mahavishnu. Because there's they're expansions. This Hiranyagarbha appears to be Garbhadakshay Vishnu. That's what it appears. The same word, Garbha word is there. Hiranyagarbha, Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And we know that Garbhadakshay Vishnu is a division of Mahavishnu. He divides himself infinitely into each and every universe. And it's described, he entered each universe. But then it specifically mentions that the Hiranyagarbha now is the assuming he's the Virat Rup. But then the next verse says this is an imaginary form. So it looks to me that this is Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who also can be understood in terms of the Virat Rupa. That's what it looks to me like.
So there's difference between Hiranyakarbha and Virat Rupa?
Mm-hmm.
The relation between Hiranyakarbha and Virat
Rupa? Again, the Virat Rupa described in the following verse, Kalpayanti, it's an imaginary form, actually. It's a conception. For those who are not can understand the actual form of the Lord, the impersonal Lord is a impersonal form, is a conception. Baba says more or less imaginary, imagined by the great philosophers. So Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who is the Vishnu of this particular universe, he can also be understood. This is his expansive energy, you see. So that can also be understood in terms of the Virat Rupa. It's like the trees or the hairs on his body, for example. The rain is his semen. Another example for the Virat Rupa. I mean, do we think that literally? When it's raining, we think, oh, Krishna's semen is falling. We don't normally think that way. But that example is given for the Virat Rupa. But that conception is there for those who just can't understand the original form, Govinda, in the spiritual world. At least they can, it takes them to the idea of having of a form. It gives them an idea of having a form. God has a form. Instead of seeing him as the impersonal Brahman, this is a step forward for such person to conceive of this universe as the gigantic body of the Lord. You see, it's a step forward. They can look out and see, oh, here's the hairs of his body, these trees. The sky is one thing, and the clouds are another thing. And this way they can, you know, they can imagine this gigantic form. And for them, it's a very big thing. They can't conceive of beyond this existence how there's a cowherd boy, you know, who sits around, taking lunch with his cowherd boyfriends, who's just doing all this with an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of himself. That's beyond their conception. It's too high level for them, you see, because they're not devotees. But such philosophers are given this facility by the Vedas to get beyond the impersonal conception. They understand how the universe is actually a big person. It's a mercy of the Bhagavatam upon such persons. But for us, it's not that attractive because we've already gone beyond it. I was one time traveling through the Appalachian Mountains with His Holiness Sri Dayananda Goswami. And it was really beautiful. We went through some valleys, you know, and the mountains and the trees. And he said, this is the Lord's Virat Rupa. But actually, it's not so attractive. And one becomes more Krishna conscious. Prabhupada was traveling with a few of his disciples in Switzerland. It was a big, big, huge mountain, the Alps, you know, Swiss Alps. And the devotees were like, oh, looking at all the scenery. And Prabhupada was completely disinterested, could care less, you see. So, when we are... we're not very Krishna conscious. We maybe become very attracted to this Virat Rupa, this universal form. But Prabhupada, you see, someone who's highly situated in Krishna consciousness, he premanjana charita bhakti valochanena. He's seeing Krishna at every minute. He sees Krishna at every minute within himself, and if he's looking externally, he sees everything in Malay. He sees Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. Yamang pashyati sarvatra sarvang cha mai pashyati tashyaham na pranashyami satchamena pranashyati. You see? The one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I'm never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So, the devotee is more interested in that. He's not so, even though we're interested because it's Bhagavatam, we're most interested to see how everything is related with Krishna. That's our interest. Yes.
So, Prabhu, that means that this materialist who see everything in the material world in relationship with this Virat Rupa, so then devotees, they see everything in this material world in relationship to something else than this.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anybody even... I don't know if anybody nowadays is... I don't know if we have any Virat Rupa philosophers even on this planet right now. There's even one person who's meditating the Virat Rupa. Now, I don't know if there are any. But there is such a... In Vedic history, there was such philosophers. I don't know if there is any of them. There could be in India. I don't know. Who really entered the Virat Rupa. This is their object of meditation. I don't know if has anybody ever met a Virat Rupa philosopher? They are there in Vedic history. Nowadays, everyone's just a gross materialist. Hedonist, you know. They just want to gratify their senses. That's the kind of people we run into now. You know, they want money, they want power, they want sex. You know, that's what people, they want intoxication. That's the kind of people we run into every day.
What about the New Age people?
Huh?
What about the New Age people?
They want the same thing. They just it's the old, same old wine in a new bottle, you know. That I am God, you know. The New Agers, they have the philosophy that I'm God. I'm the incarnation of God. And therefore everything is for my enjoyment because I'm God. The same thing. It's another form of hedonism, that's all, this New Age philosophy. But we're interested to see everything in relation with Krishna. Because as soon as you see that this is Krishna's property, you see, then you're not the enjoyer. Just like there's a beautiful girl when you're out preaching. You don't think she's for your enjoyment. You think, she belongs to Krishna. Now she's somehow wandered away from Krishna, so I have to give her a book so she can come back to Krishna. Or there's some wealthy businessman, you see, in his Mercedes Benz, you see. We're not attracted to thinking, well, I would like to be a wealthy man. No, we're thinking, this person is suffering because he doesn't realize who is the actual owner. He thinks he's the owner, therefore he's suffering like anything. So, whether it's a beautiful girl, wealthy businessman, you see, we want to engage them in Krishna's service so they can become happy. We want Krishna to be happy because these are his parts and parcels, his beloved children who've wandered away somehow or other from his abode. We want them all to come back so that Krishna can be happy, so that they can become happy. See, a devotee doesn't have any mood for independent happiness. What is that statement in the Sandarbha? Bhajaniya Purusha Purusha Param Sukha Matra Sva Sukhatvam. It's stated in the Sandarbha. The devotee, he has, his happiness is simply the happiness of Krishna. He doesn't have any separate happiness. His only happiness is the happiness of Krishna. That's the devotee, you see. So the devotee's totally given up the propensity to be a separate enjoyer. He's totally given up. He has no desire to enjoy on his own anymore. You see? His only desire is that Krishna will enjoy. And that's how he enjoys. The only way a devotee enjoys is by Krishna's enjoyment. And if we try to enjoy separately, that's our non-devotee nature left over from the path. And we have to gradually get rid of them. Because that's killing us. It's holding us back in our spiritual progress. Next question.
How should we preach to the new age people?
Depends on their mentality, because every one of them is different. As I said, we're all snowflakes, you know, with different qualities and characteristics. You really have to see, everyone has their own thing that will, you know, that will appeal to them. You have to be intuitive. Try to be an instrument in the hands of Krishna, and by experience, you know, you can judge by people's, you know, face of the index of the mind, body language also, the way they speak, what they say, the tone of voice. A book distributor becomes expert at picking up on their vibes, as we say, you see. What is this? What will attract this person? You see, we have a rule not to preach to the faithless, and they're all faithless, and here we are preaching to all of them. So what does it mean not to preach to the faithless? It means don't cause them to be blasphemy. It means you have to find a way to approach everyone in such a way that you'll penetrate to their through their faithless covering, and you'll actually touch that faithless nature in their heart. So that's the real key in preaching. And actually, Prabhupada told me, he sent me one letter, that we can approach anyone, you see. And just describing these books in the best descriptive manner, we can catch anyone who approaches a book, even an atheist, Prabhupada gave me in his letter. Such a nice letter the Prabhupada sent me about book distribution, you know, how to be successful in getting everyone to take a book. Who could be the better sales manager than Prabhupada? He was giving the tip, you see. He said, describe the books in the best descriptive manner. So, when you're a new ager, what's going to appeal to him? You see, you have to see what kind of description of these books will excite a new ager. You see. That's what you have to think. And, you know, everybody is into this aspect or that aspect of the material nature. Everyone has their own particular aspect that they're into. So you have to judge which aspect are they into. What are they most turned on by? What are they most attracted to? Present the philosophy in a way that appeals to that person. See, our philosophy is so broad that actually it has universal appeal. I tried different approaches, and I gave a lecture series in Lithuania. And in Estonia, I tried different lectures, different approaches. One, the environment. That's one approach. Some people are real worried about global warming, you see. So you can appeal to them by talking about global warming. How this will solve all the environmental problems. You're worried about global warming? Environmental, ecological imbalance. Well, this is the perfect solution. We're working now to solve all the environmental problems of the world. We have the formula. That's, some people get turned on by that. They had me give a lecture at an art institute. all these artists, you know, I said, the perfection, how to perfect your talent. I gave a lecture on that. Many people came for that one too. The artists came for that one. So if you're talking to a painter, well, maybe, you know, how would you like to perfect your art talent? You see, dovetail it with the Supreme, and then your art will become perfect. That's, and then we gave another lecture, peace and prosperity. You see, everybody wants money and they want peace. No one has enough money nor enough peace. So we, and that appealed to many people too. So you have to, you know, you have to kind of feel them out, see where they're at. You know, a book distributor, you deal with so many people, you can pick up on their vibes pretty easily. The way they're standing, what they're smoking, you know, what kind of car, what kind of clothes, how many earrings, how many, you know, tongue pins they have or whatever. You can pick up on where they're at and just present it just for that person. Take your, just like a tailor is, you can go to a department store and get a business suit that's a generic, you know. And it doesn't, it fits okay, but it's not, that's not that great, you know. Let's face it. Department store business suits are really not that great. But you go to a tailor, right, and who measures everything, exactly how long it is from your wrist to your elbow to your shoulder, every little detail around your waist, around your chest, around your neck, he's got every little detail down to the, you know, the very precisely measure. And he makes a suit. I mean, wow. You see. So a book distributor is like a tailor, you see. When you see that person, you've got to tailor fit your presentation just for that person. And Prabhupada told me, actually one can become so expert that every single person will take a book. Every single person will take a book. So it's a book distribution is the greatest service, the most enlivening activity that one can do. I have one disciple now. He's actually an engineer. He works a job by the day, but as soon as he gets off work, immediately he goes out and distributes books. He's living in the temple also, and he wants to be nice to the devotees and he do a little temple service. But he's always thinking how to get out and get out in the street with those books again, because that's where he really gets the nectar. That's where he really gets enlivened, you see. When he's out on book distribution, that's when he's tasting the sweetest, sweetest nectar. And then he sends me the story. It's just amazing, the experiences he has when he's out on Sankirtan. That's where we really, when you're on the front line, you know, and it's just you, depending completely on Lord Chaitanya's mercy. There's nobody else to help you. It's just you and Lord Chaitanya and your Guru Maharaj. And you're out there just, you know, you have to do it. There's nobody else will do it. You have to do it. You have to convince them to take the book. There's nobody else that's going to come in and help you do it. You have to be completely empowered. You have to. It's the most exciting, enlivening thing. But now you're the one that's going to have to convince them. So all the full energy of Krishna has to come through you. Successful preaching means that Krishna is acting through you. And there's nothing more enlivening than actually being an instrument in the hands of Krishna and letting him, let his energy flow through you to convince this person to take a book, you see, and to take up Krishna consciousness. So anyway, any other questions? Yeah.
Also, we distribute these books to many kinds of people. Sometimes we meet like very, very intellectual people, but still they cannot understand what's in these books.
That means their intellectualism is a joke. They're not really intelligent people. It's pseudo-intellectualism. It's not real intellectualism, you see. I can tell you that a real intellectual is always trying to expand his intelligence more and more and more and more and more. He wants to learn and learn and learn and learn and learn. He's always open. He's greedy like a sponge, always wanting to soak up more knowledge, more understanding of what is reality, you see. But if somebody doesn't really want to learn, they're like intellectually constipated, so to speak. You see. They don't. Someone who really wants to learn, they'll be very eager. Oh, you see, someone who's really a true intellectual, every intellectual will be greedy to get the hold of these books. A true intellectual would be greedy to read these books. It means they're intellectuals in name only. But by your expertise, you see, you can inspire them to become a real intellectual. That's where the book distributor can do the greatest service. Prabhupada actually told us, you ask them what is their philosophy and then defeat it. So somehow you have to show them that there's a higher intelligence they're not aware of, and it's here. And if you, it's you know, you have to somehow excite them, enliven them, to understand that there's something much more beyond what they know now, and that they can get it here if they want it. Questions, Mark? Any questions on the ladies' side?
Okay. Shavira, what is the best way to approach a person when you are distributing the books? Because, and then, how can you get that that interest for him? Because usually we approach he says, just, you know, no, I don't need him.
Well, the very simple thing is that the more that you're interested in Krishna, the more you can interest others. Interest is a contagious disease. If I'm not very interested in Krishna and I'm out there doing this service, I'll have a really rough time distributing books. I mean, it's going to be very difficult. If I'm not that interested in Krishna myself, I'm out here on the street and I'm looking at all the stores, I'm looking at all the girls, I'm looking at the magazines and the magazine racks. You know, if I'm not so interested in Krishna, then I'm not going to be very successful in interesting anybody in Krishna. Because I'm not that interested myself, you see. But if I'm extremely interested in Krishna, as soon as I wake up in the morning, I'm thinking of Krishna. When I take prasadam, I'm thinking of Krishna. When I'm dancing in the arti, I'm thinking, let me dance and sing very with love for Krishna so he'll appreciate my singing and dancing, you see. If I try to labor the devotees in such a way, seeing these are Krishna's representatives, I have to serve them with love and please them by my behavior, you see. In this way, if you're just very, very, very Krishna conscious, then when you go on the street, people will be attracted to you like a magnet, because actually they're all devotees of Krishna. They've just lost their contact with him, that's all. They've lost their contact with Krishna. So you just have to dive deeper and deeper and deeper into the ocean, the Premamrita Sindhu, you see, that nectarian ocean of love of Krishna consciousness. Premamrita Sindhu. You have to dive deeper and deeper. Therefore we have morning program. I can't understand why devotees don't go to Mangalarti. It's very many temples. No one, hardly anyone goes to Mangalarti. I can't understand it. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he states in the ninth prayer of the Gravastakam, it's an add-on prayer described about the eighth prayer. He said that anyone who will sing these prayers during the Brahma Muhurta, the time of death, they will get the direct service of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Now, who would not want to have the direct service of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan? So, going to Mangal Arati gives that benediction. So we need to get up the first, if you want to be a successful preacher, the first business is get up for Mangal Arati. If you want to be able to convince others of Krishna, the first principle is get up for Mangal Arati. If you're not living in a temple, for our householders on the outside, we tell them, get up by 4 o'clock at home. Because actually, Prabhupada explains, this is Vedic culture, you see. The one who doesn't follow Vedic culture, what are they called? Mlecha. If someone doesn't rise early for the Brahma Muhurta, they are Mlecha, according to Prabhupada's books. So we encourage our householders, don't be Mlechas. Get up early. If you're not close enough to come to the temple for Mangal Arati, then you rise at home by 4 o'clock, take your bath, and sing Gravastakam prayers, offer an arti. Everyone should rise and cultivate Krishna consciousness in the early morning hours. In this way, the enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness becomes very strong. And then we go out to interact with the public, people will be interested in what we have to say. Very, very interested. Because if we're getting a very deep, sweet taste from this Krishna consciousness, then others will be attracted to us. It's a simple thing. You become interested. You become more and more and more and more interested in Krishna. And then you can interest the whole world in Krishna. This is our philosophy. Yad yad artarishi shreshtas. The whole world will become attracted, you see. Any other questions? Yeah?
How to get a taste from Mangalarati?
Huh?
How to get a taste from Mangalarati?
Attend it every day. That's the first thing.
But you're not going again.
If you're going, yeah. Then you have to... Then it's nice to remember the ninth prayer of Vishwanathakaralitaku. He gives the ninth prayer. We don't sing it, but it's there. You can look it up. I think it's in the Veda base. I think it's printed out there. I forget where it says, but it said the ninth prayer is given. And if you meditate on that ninth prayer, that by going to Mangal Arti, I'm actually, that will inspire you. And then meditate on the meaning. Learn the meaning of each Sanskrit word. And meditate on the meaning while you're singing it. And then try to sing and try to sing with love. Try to sing in such a way that Krishna will be very attracted to your singing. Try to make it very pleasing and sweet and beautiful for the Lord's ears. And another good way to become, this is what I was doing this morning during Mangalarti. Because one of my godbrothers, he just suffered a stroke, and luckily he didn't kill him. Urjaspat, a very dedicated Sankirtan preacher, who's preaching now. He opened a center down in Central America somewhere, engaging in training all the young men how to become preachers. So dedicated. He was sitting in a Bhagavatam class in Tucson, and he had a stroke right in the middle of the class. Boom, he collapsed in the middle of the class. They had to call in the medics. And especially as we get older, you know. And now this body is 60 years old. So I was thinking this morning, I can die at any time. If I was going to die here in the next 20 minutes, how much feeling would I put into singing this kirtan? That's what I was thinking this morning. If I was to die this morning, if I was to have a stroke and, you know, drop dead here on the floor of the Helsinki temple room, and this is my last kirtan, how much love, how much focus, how much meditation would I put into it to make it nice for Krishna and nice for Prabhupada? So that's another way to do it. Think, well, if this is my last kirtan, how much will I put into it? If this is my last Mangalarti to ever attend, how much will I absorb myself in it? That's one way. So I think our time must be running short.
Isn't the instruction of a spiritual master to wake up for Mangalarti is enough to get everybody to Mangalarti?
Yes, if one is a dedicated disciple, then all it takes is the spiritual master's word. Rise from Mangalarti, that's it. Guru wants me to rise from Mangalarti, so I will do. That is sufficient. Nothing else is required. Guru is instructed, so now I do. That's it. Simple thing. Whatever Guru says, that's what I do. Finished. No ifs, no ands, and no buts. Guru said, so now I do. That's it. Guru said, distribute books, so I distribute books. Guru said, start a college, so I do that. Whatever order is given. Guru says, do Ratha Yatra. Guru says, do this. Whatever Guru says, I do. That's all. Finished. That's disciple. So, we'll stop here. And we thank you all very much for carrying on this wonderful mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here in the land of the Finns. Please push it forward under the expert guidance of His Grace Sriman Tathavad Prabhu. Make a revolution in this country. I'm hoping for that day when your high court judges will be wearing tilak here in Finland. That is, if you distribute enough books, that day will come when the high court judges here will wear tilaks. Your prime minister will go Haribo. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Shri Sankarshan Dasa Bihari Maharaj Ki Jai.